welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Recording from my cloud.
I mean, it's your cloud.
Yeah, we've started. Welcome to episode 360.
360, yeah.
Of the Self-Help Podcast, which took you by surprise, Sean.
Yeah, well, as you said, it's nearly one for every day of the year, so you could have a real fest, couldn't you, every day, listening to you and I. That'd probably drive you, give you post-traumatic stress disorder, probably.
Well, that would be an interesting experiment. That's what we're talking about this week, isn't it? We've kind of been just shooting the breeze a little bit in the last few weeks as we digest and try and shift our minds into this new world that we're all living in. But we're kind of hopping back onto more general stuff about PTSD and anxiety this week, aren't we? But I'm sure we will relate it to the state of the world at the moment.
Yeah, well, that's really where it comes from for me, because I'm starting to get frontline workers now feeding through that are suffering the issues of post-trauma, mainly accumulative because of what they're having to deal with. You know, it's tough stuff.
Yes. Yeah. I'll bet. Well, it'll be. I say, well, I think we're actually, is this week six for the UK in terms of people being shut away in their houses on the whole?
Yeah. Well, now we're in week five, aren't we?
Week five. Okay. I've lost track.
I think we're in week five. Yeah. The way that it worked in Italy was this was the week when all the problems began. The instability, people cracking up, and then people starting to react and be more kind of revolting about what was going on.
Yeah.
You know.
How are you coping, or how are you getting on? How's your life proceeding at the moment? You said earlier on before we came on air that you've picked up a few new clients this week.
Yeah. It's rather than getting quieter, it's getting busier. One of the issues, which is tough. But I guess one of the biggest things for me, I've realised it last week and this week really, is I'm used to working on my own because that's what I do. And I'm used to being in the house on my own because everyone else goes out to work. But they're not going out to work now. So in some ways, I've kind of lost the space that I work in. if I'm working with somebody on headphones, say we're doing an audio call, I could be actually walking around the house doing other things, you know, and while I'm doing it, you know, just kind of stretching my legs. Can't do that now. I'm feeling the restriction of having other people around that I'm not used to having around, which is odd.
Yeah, but you're coping with it all right, and you're not lashing out, and you're not getting ratty, are you, Sean?
I haven't beaten the tar out of anybody yet, that kind of thing.
That's good to hear. That is good to hear. I watched, I don't know if I should have, but I've watched a couple of movies in the last week about pandemics. Because Netflix wants me to, apparently. It keeps showing them on my, you must watch this movie when I log in. So I did. First one is Outbreak, which is a 1990s movie with Dustin Hoffman. I mean, it's, you know, people die and all that stuff. It doesn't really relate that much to what we're going through at the moment. I think it's a bit more, out there. So if you want to give that a go for more of a laugh. The second one is called Contagion, which is, I think it was released in 2012. And that has some eerie parallels with what we're going through at the moment. It's like quite on the money in a lot of ways. And the only thing it really gets wrong, by quite a long way so far at least, is that it focuses a lot on the breakdown of society and like looting and like civilization almost just coming to a grinding halt, which maybe to our credit, you know, so far we're doing all right, holding things together, aren't we?
I don't like the so far in that.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I'm trying to look at the longer, the bigger picture of all this stuff. And I do feel that we're in the easy phase at the moment. You know, the government's got a hold on things. People are being paid still who've lost their jobs or who aren't able to work right now. Yeah. I'm not an economist, so I don't know how long that can be kept up. And, you know, I watched on the news last night that, as you said earlier before we came on air, it could be early next year until pubs and restaurants can open. And even when they do, you know, they might only be able to seat a quarter of the people that they can now, and they might not be economically viable. So, I mean, it's. I don't want to freak anyone out, but we've got a lot of work to do. And I do feel that it's going to be a long old haul, this, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm maintaining the kind of stance where we don't have problems, we have learning opportunities. It's a very real thing. If we start looking at this from the point of view, it's a problem, it gets worse. As if we look at it from the point of view, okay, how can we work with this? How can we make our lives different? What are the benefits in it? Because there are lots of people that are saying positive things to me. Like, one of the things the day before, Ree said to me, have you seen the colour of the sky? And we were looking at the blueness of the sky, and it was really, really a powerful colour. And we were assuming that it's because the air's clear. There's no pollution in the air. And that's us living in a fairly country on the coast kind of situation, really. What's it like if you are in a heavy industrial area? I wonder whether, you know, they're seeing blue skies as well now.
I don't know. I know. I talk a lot about that kind of stuff, and that, yeah, there are a lot of benefits being highlighted at the moment, and we will emerge into hopefully a better version of civilization than that we left. But I think the latest stat I saw that is we're on track for cutting carbon emissions by about 5.5% this year. Which is a bit like, oh, is that it? Because the reality, like, to hit our Paris climate change thing, we actually need to be doing 7.5% every year for the next 15 years or something like that.
So surely this is making a dent in our carbon usage.
It is, but not enough. Even with this, it's not enough. Which just goes to show the huge job we've got beyond this crisis. It's like,
it does make loads of sense. I mean, both Ray and I have been cycling a lot. We've been talking Ed Talk about, you know, the importance of cycling, the difference it's made, and how often do we use the cars when we could just jump on a bike and go and do something, or walk even, come to that. And I think that's a real reality. I think I said to you last time, Robert making that joke about my car's doing really well, it does 4 weeks of the gallon, kind of thing. You know, and how often do we use a car when we don't need to? Mm-hmm. You know?
I know. I've been telling you.
You've been telling me. Yeah. Well, I'm hearing you now. So if I hear you doing that and then you hear me and start meditating, we would have cracked it.
I know, yeah, imagine. All right, come on. We'll crack on with the episode because actually, I need to switch on. I think there's an option in Zoom to say how long we've been chatting for, which I could do with doing. But we're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder this week, aren't you? So what triggered that for you? Because you made that decision, Sean.
Well, I've got people that are now feeding through the system that are dealing with multiple deaths, which are tough because you can't process one before the next one comes along because of the nature of what's going on. It's that, or it's the particular difficult kind of deaths, which are creating a post-trauma for people. But also when you can't complete something, so you can't actually be with someone when they die, they are trying to change that. Or when someone has died, you can't actually do a proper funeral.
Right.
You know, there's all those things that are feeding into this kind of traumatic build-up that's inside people. And that's going to come out later on. I'm expecting next year to be my trauma year. And one of the things we said, we'll talk about in a minute, is rewinding, which is something that I do quite a lot. But people need to be rewound to desensitize parts of their brain that get sensitized by the trauma.
Yeah, or trauma, or trauma, depending on how you want to pronounce it, is it's a Greek word meaning wound. Is that right, Sean? Yeah. I read from your blog post.
Yeah, and it originally related to physical wound. So a cut, something in your body.
But well, that's still used in like in a medical setting, trauma.
Yeah.
It's still used, isn't it? Like trauma, in terms of physical trauma.
Yeah. But with the development of psychology and psychological practice, then that idea of trauma could be, could be related to anything. It could be related to obviously emotions and thoughts, but it could also be related things like finance. You know, there's lots of traumatic events that people have to deal with that are like, if you, like wound is a good idea. If you think about it as a wound, that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah.
So what's the difference between trauma and being traumatized?
Well, lots of people experience traumas, but they don't get traumatized. So is an event which is traumatic. To be traumatized is to take those unresolved emotions away from the trauma and take them away with you. Yeah, so you're not processing. Some people can process trauma very quickly, and it might simply be sit down, cup of tea, take a deep breath, okay, come and get on with it. Some people that become traumatized, it starts to affect them, and you start to get symptomology developing. So that in terms of traumatic experience, everybody has post-trauma after an event. It could simply be that if you hit your thumb with a hammer and you're jumping around going fish cakes, fish cakes, fish cakes and sucking your thumb, and that's the post-traumatic effect. And it could be throbbing for days, you know, so you got that trauma building up. If you have a traumatic event that you just witnessed, like a road traffic accident or something like that, we would expect you to process it in 4 to 6 weeks, so that you might have disturbed sleep, you might feel anxious, over alert, that kind of stuff. But it would fade off over 4 to 6 weeks. If it's still there after the 4 to 6 weeks, then you've got post-traumatic stress disorder. So it's becoming a disorder, which can then feed into feelings, thoughts, flashbacks, sleep patterns, eating patterns, disturb your relationships. It starts to get in the way of everything.
Right, so I mean, we're 5-6 weeks into this crisis now, then, in this pandemic. So is this when people, we need to be a little bit wary of our friends and family about how they're getting on and how they're responding to the huge changes that we're all facing?
Yeah. And the other one, I think, is that when you're looking at family groups is the children. If the children have been watching news broadcasts or listening to adults talking about death and destruction, they may have a kind of vicarious post-trauma inside them where they're just scared of things, you know, scared of their parents, their grandparents, themselves, anything.
Yeah, going near. I know, yeah, I'm really, well, not concerned, but I'm a bit fascinated. I'm worried about the long-term impacts on kids. I mean, I was chatting to, I was riding along and someone said, hello. And I looked in front garden. It was a chap I know from one of the clubs that Will goes to. So I had a quick chat with him, and yeah, he was talking about how he's a bit worried about, you know, they have the news on at lunchtime and the kids are still around, similar age to mine, you know,
yep. He's
5, 6, 7-ish. And he remember one day there was like video and of mass graves being dug in New York, and like body bags being thrown in. He thought, oh, that's not like the most healthiest thing that kids should be seeing at this. You know, and I've had chats with Will, my eldest. He's been asking about how many people have died so far, Dad. And, you know, I've been explaining to him and, you know, trying to explain that, yeah, a lot of people have died, you know. But a lot of people die every day anyway, you know. And, yeah, the numbers have gone up significantly. But so I'm trying to navigate that minefield of how to discuss with an 8-year-old what's going on in the world, you know, without...
The thing that we haven't done yet... And we really need to do it, is each day we put out these figures as to who's died of what. but we don't put out the figures of who survived, who was released from hospital today because they survived the virus, how many people. Because very often in a day, it can be more people are released that have survived than have been taken in, you know. But we don't see that. We don't focus on that.
It was one of the earlier on in the news cycle. That was something that was talked about more, and I have heard it mentioned, and certainly in the last week or two. Maybe I'm not processing it, but I'm sure that was made more of early on. I don't know.
Yeah.
I know the care home situation is being highlighted more now. Because I don't think those deaths have been in the daily stats up until now, but it seems like they.
The stats were hospital stats because they're easy to get. They're easy to get at.
Yeah.
Whereas to gather all the other stats, you're days behind with those.
Yeah. Blimey. All right. So
never clean.
I mean, I'm going to stick a link into another website, helpguide.org, which has got an article about dealing with traumatic stress. How come some people... So, like, my mate is an orthopaedic surgeon. So he will... He tends to deal with appointments that have been booked in up until recently, you know, so he'll have, you know, do hip and knee operations. So not necessarily traumatic things where it's all kicking off all of a sudden, like in A&E. But the things that he sees every day or until recently will be, for your average person like me, quite traumatic things to process in terms of what he's doing on the operating table, even though it's a very controlled environment. So how come, what are medical people, are they trained early on to deal with that potentially traumatic, the visuals that they see, and how, or is it just something they learn as they go along?
If you look at people that are dealing with trauma like that, whether it's a surgeon, whether it's a 999 worker, whether it's a soldier, very often we would see them socially as having a bit missing. We might feel that they're not as emotionally connected as other people.
Yeah. That's definitely.
But that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Because if someone can disassociate emotionally, doesn't mean they have to be emotionless, but if they can put their emotions on one side to deal with what's going on, then they can be rational and logical and get it right. So it's that thing about you don't want a surgeon to open you up and be going, oh, my God, what are we going to do? Yeah, you want someone who's going to be logical. Someone who's going to be really precise, and you need that. And without that, you end up in a situation where everybody's running around like headless chickens, not getting anything done. You need the person that's going to say, okay. There was a case I had to deal with a few years ago where there was a fire in a ward and everybody went into headless chicken mode, except for one of the assistants, who was only a healthcare assistant, but he was ex-army and he'd been on the front line. He dealt with all kinds of stuff and he could see this chaos going on and patients were being taken towards the fire and he lost it and stood on a table and shouted his head off and everybody became silent. And then he told everybody what to do to get everybody out, which they did really successfully, because he could keep his head whilst other people were losing theirs, including the doctors and the consultants had lost it as well.
Wow.
But he got disciplined afterwards for shouting rudely at a consultant who wouldn't listen. But actually, he was right. He was the guy that actually saved the day. He didn't get praised for it. He got disciplined for it. But the that sense about who's keeping their head together, you know. If you've broken your leg and it needs setting, can I say to you, can you just bite on this stick whilst I set your leg? Because it's going to hurt you, but I'm going to get it in. And the quicker I can do it, and I know it's going to hurt you, then the better off you're going to be in the long run. Or do I go, I can't do this, I can't do this, what do I do? Yeah. But if you can separate your emotions out, it's really useful. And then you can worry about it afterwards.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay.
I've known loads of people that deal with really difficult stuff and then afterwards go and have a drink with their mates or something. And that's when they talk it through. You know?
Yeah.
Sometimes they would come to a therapist like me or whatever. But it's like ways of processing after the event. It's when you don't process after the event that problems set in.
Yeah.
accumulated.
And the classic one for that will be people that have come back from military situations, a nasty war, and they've not, I take it, processed it at the right moment, and then it's just kind of accumulated and built up and led to all sorts of issues.
Yeah. And that's when we start to talk about repression, that to deal with the stuff that's going on, if you've got multiple deaths going on all around you, you're dealing with stuff and then you're putting it in the cupboard and getting on and doing what you've got to do. So you're not actually processing and dealing with the stuff that's going on around you, which means it builds up and builds up. And in the end, the cupboard's full. And if the cupboard bursts, you have what would be seen as a breakdown. It would be that kind of thing. And once you break down, it takes you a long time to get back up again.
So for our medics that are out there now, and they're like our frontline soldiers at the moment in this war, if you want to call it that, what should they be doing, or what should they be thinking of, and what systems are in place? Two years from now, they're not having nervous breakdowns and they're not waking up in the middle of the night screaming.
I think there will be amount of people that are going to be like that in 2 years' time, and that's what we need to build into the system. In the short term, most of the hospital trusts have pulled in psychologists and psyche services and occupational health, and they're trying to build up that ongoing support, phone lines that you can ring, all that kind of stuff, which works for some people. Other people, they can be talking to their friends or their family, and that helps them if the friends and family can cope with it, because that can, you get that vicarious post-trauma then if you're passing it on to other people that can't deal with it. So it's that thing about if we keep talking, we keep processing. And my thing is, and I put it in at the end of the blog, is the thing about the mindfulness stuff is really important. If you can sit down and do meditation, what you're doing is you're clearing your mind. You're processing stuff through. So in a way, you become your own therapist. The problem with mindfulness that you have to be careful of is that if people do have a lot of repressed emotion that hasn't been dealt with, and suddenly you get them to still their mind, they've taken off all the control mechanisms, and suddenly all this stuff can jump out, and they can end up worse off than when they started. So mindfulness for people that are traumatized has to be done with someone who knows what they're doing and can guide the person through the experience. Yeah.
Do you know any decent people out there that might be able to help with that?
Yeah, I could help you with that. Now, there are quite a few people around. You just have to be careful. You can't just say to someone, yeah, you just need to meditate and it'll be okay. That can actually make the situation worse. You have to be prepared for that processing that's going on.
We got rewinding on the list. There's a few bits and bobs, but we haven't mentioned rewinding. I haven't heard it uttered in a long time on this podcast. So remind me what rewinding is, Sean.
What you do with the rewind is that because, and if you can get your head around this, you've got it really. When we think about things from a memory point of view, we think about pictures. We see things in pictures, so we don't see words. You don't. If I say think of a bird, you don't think B-I-R-D. You've got a picture of a bird flapping in your head. If someone's saying to you, oh, I've had a terrible time at work today, the pictures in their head about what they've experienced. Yeah. What comes out of their mouth might only be a miniature part of that. Okay? And the problem is that talking therapies for this kind of deep trauma don't always work effectively because people aren't sharing the depth of feeling. They're using words to interpret these pictures in their head. When you do rewinding, the person isn't required to talk. What they do is they close their eyes and you take them back through experiences that are individual in their head. They don't have to say what they are. And then you use a technique where you run it backwards and forwards to get them to desensitize the emotions around those images. So that at the beginning, if they observe those images in their mind, they get anxious and start to palpitate, get upset. If you rewind it, they can observe those images and not get a high state of arousal doing it because you desensitized it. And that's what needs to happen to lots of people. Well, it's interesting with rewind work, because once you've shown someone how to rewind something, they can very often rewind themselves after that.
So,
if I'm dealing with a lot of traumatic events, although I do have someone that I talk to regulate my madness, I would actually sit down and do what appears like meditation, but I might actually be rewinding, visually going over my experience and rewinding it back and forth until it's desensitized and I can observe it without it making me upset or whatever.
Cool.
Yeah. It all sounds a bit like voodoo and a bit weird because there's no words involved. I've actually had someone come into me who was a medical practitioner who'd been through an awful experience that they couldn't even get into talking about. So what we did was I just got her to close her eyes and got her to relax. And then we rewound the experience and got her to the point. The first time that she went through, I could see her getting a little agitated and upset. After about half an hour of working with it, she could view it without getting aroused about it. When we'd finished that rewind, she was then able to tell me what it was about. She couldn't even talk about it before. Yeah.
Wow.
So only like sort of 40 minutes, and you can desensitize very deep trauma. Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah. Wow. We should do like a live rewinding example.
I'll get a volunteer to
come on the show and volunteer. We'll do some live rewinding. Yeah. That'd be fascinating, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Just before that, on the blog, you mentioned eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, EMDR. Is that linked to rewinding as well then?
Well, EMDR is a way that people deal with post-trauma. It's one of the techniques. And it's useful if this has happened. If someone goes through a trauma and then they sleep fairly soon afterwards, very often in the dream cycle when they go to sleep, it's the rapid eye movement part. Those images and that experience gets put up the back of the cupboard. It gets encoded up the back. So the person can go through a trauma. It could be a rape or whatever. They go to sleep and then wake up a few hours later and get up and go on with their life as though nothing's happened. Yeah, because it's locked in the back of the head. Sometimes it will come back out again and become a problem. When you use EDMR, what you're doing is you're using the rapid eye movement, which is replicating the dream cycle, which put the information in, and you're using it to get the stuff out.
Yeah. Blimey.
So it can be effective for people that have been traumatized and then have repressed it. That's when I've seen it being most useful.
Yeah, okay. But it's not on your list, actually, or in the blog, but is hypnotherapy relevant at all to this conversation?
It's hypnotherapy. You could consider things like rewind to be like a hypno type technique, because you're in deep relaxation, you're in, you know, that kind of state of REM state almost. So yes, you could see that. But the thing you have to be careful of is lots of this stuff, like hypno, if you've got deep trauma and you start releasing it using hypno, you can create more of a problem than you started with. You have to know what you're doing to be able to not damage people with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful.
Yeah, I'll bet. And I think it's last on the list for a reason, but we haven't talked medication at all, because I take it medication is the last resort in some ways, is it?
Well, the thing is that from a GP's point of view, it's the first resort. So people might get propranolol for heightened anxiety, and they might get antidepressants, that kind of stuff. And they work really well for them in the short term. The idea is that they were designed to hold you up emotionally while you did the psychotherapeutic work underneath, which solved the problem. So you could come off the medication, you'd be fine. What happens at the moment is people get put on medication, they don't get the psychotherapy. So when they come off the medication, they bomb. So whereas you've got medication that was designed to be used for between 6 months and a year, say, the people are on for like 14, 15, 20 years. and they shouldn't be on it like that. It should be processed. There should be emotional processing going on. But it's a cost issue. In the era of austerity, it's one of the things that gets chucked out, you know.
Well, yeah. You, basically. Psychotherapy.
Yeah.
How many? Yeah, we got enough. Have we got a shortage of counsellors and psychotherapists and psychologists in the world?
I think that there are a lot of people around that are doing it. There are a lot of people that are good therapists who aren't necessarily traditionally qualified. There are good people out there doing work. The biggest problem is that there's a lack of funding, you know, for people to access stuff easily. You know, I try and have a sliding scale. So I when people, you know, have really got no money, then I'll see them, you know, I mean, whatever. People need to be seen. But very often people are priced out of the market. You know, they need help and they can't get it unless you go to a charity based thing.
I wonder if artificial intelligence will ever reach the point where we, like Siri can help us mentally, or Alexa.
Someone did experiment with a thing like a Siri that was a psychology thing. And you talk to it and it would answer and ask you questions and stuff. It annoyed me. And I told it to F off. And it said to me, "Don't swear at me." I thought that was very funny. But yeah. But maybe we get that. I don't know. You can't beat a person in the end.
Yeah, you kind of summarise in the blog post that, you know, in the aftermath of the pandemic, there'll be many people carrying post-trauma from their experience. Yeah. So just to finish off and summarise, what should we all be doing as part of our daily routines to
the biggest thing is talk. The biggest thing to talk is don't hold stuff inside you. You know, it's like having a splinter inside you. Splinters create pus, and pus creates infection. You know, it's like it damages your system. And that's what it's like. You need to talk. And very often you can't talk to the people that are closest to you because the things that you need to say, very often you're fearful that it's going to hurt them or damage them.
Yeah.
You know, so very often you do need to talk to someone who appears like a stranger, you know, that you can just go blah too. And that's the key, though. It's talk. It's do something about it. The worst thing for human beings is when they hunker down and they don't do stuff. They don't look after themselves. Yeah.
Have you got a resource of the week, John?
No, I haven't. I was thinking about that. And it's like the resource has to be look around you and decide who it is that can help support you. Who can you talk to? And it could be someone on the end of a phone. It could be a friend. It could be someone who's with you. But the important thing is, who is it?
Yeah.
And if there is a resource that we need at this moment, is we need each other. You know, it's that if we look after each other, we're all going to be all right routine. But we have to get into the habit of allowing other people to help us. That's the other bit, yeah?
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Could be a guinea pig. I'm taking great solace and comfort in my guinea pigs at the moment, just loving having little chats with them and, you know, having little cuddles.
Yeah, brilliant.
I should have brought them on. In fact, I've been thinking about live streaming guinea pigs.
Yeah.
YouTube stars, because, yeah, people love guinea pigs. Gorgeous little things. My resource is that helpguide.org post-trauma article I found, which is really useful.
Yeah.
And your own blog post will be online as well by the time this goes out.
Yep. Very good.
So livingthepresent.co.uk. I think I forgot to mention it at the start. Any new listeners out there, take a look and do sign up for our mailing list and some free meditation files as well. And next week, perhaps, possibly, and the week after, we might be having some special guests on, right?
Yeah.
Not guinea pigs.
Yep. Yeah, we've got two people that need to come on and share what they're doing, which is important.
Yeah, we'll have a chat about that before. That'd be cool. Right, Sean, I'll leave you to it.
You take care. Have a good day.
Yeah. You too. All the best, guys. Take it easy.
Bye now.
Bye.